This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Taking a look at the issues surrounding the health and well-being of our LGBTIQ+ communities. This is Well Well Well, brought to you by the team from Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network.
Here on Well Well Well, we delve into the issues impacting and surrounding the health and well-being of our gender, sex and sexuality diverse communities. Coming to you from Thorn Harbour Health's headquarters on Woiwurrung Wurundjeri Country. I'm your host, Jack Frangianen, joined in studio by Jacinta Hennicom. Hello, hello.
Hi.
We are getting so close to the LGBTIQ+ Women's Health Conference.
It is very soon. It is, well, as of this week, it's 2 weeks.
2 weeks away.
Yeah.
The 24th and 25th of October at Abbotsford Convent. I mean, the program has been up for a little while now. Registrations have been open, and you can find all of that at lgbtiqwhc.au. But I believe there are also some scholarships that people who might be curious about attending but might not have the resources to probably should know about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously registration has been open for a while and we do have different types of prices, different tiers.
Yep.
But of course we know that financial barriers exist for many people in our communities.
Yeah.
And also just people interested in coming along and learning more about this area of work and community. So we do have scholarships available.
Yep.
That is something that we are really glad to be able to offer to people who might need that extra support to
Yep.
be able to attend and have registration cost covered. So if you are someone who is interested in coming along to the conference, but money perhaps is holding you back, please get in touch with us. You can email us conference@thornharbour.org. And yeah, basically just let us know that you need a scholarship to be able to attend and we'll be able to pass on a code for you. And also on that note, if you are a media representative,
yep.
you're there to grab some content for any kind of things that you're getting out there
yep.
in relation to media, you are able to access a media pass.
Yes.
So again, please email us conference@thornharbour.org. And we'll be able to supply you with the media pass for the conference. It'd be amazing to get the information and all of the incredible knowledge that our presenters will be sharing out there into the world. So please get in touch with us. And yeah, we just really want to make this as big as possible and be able to share that space with everyone.
And really, you know, encourage the conversation beyond the conference as well, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't end with, you know, it doesn't end on the 25th of October.
No.
A lot of those conversations start over those 2 days. So,
yeah, absolutely.
For more information, like we said, lgbtiqwhc.au is the website. You know, with the conference coming up, we've been covering, or I guess speaking to a number of people that are doing presentations and panels, planning to at that conference. We have another one of those joining us this week. Who are we speaking to, Jacinta?
Yeah, so I've really been looking forward to having this conversation. We will be talking to Annie Lamont from eSafety. And Annie is an expert on gender-based violence with 12 years' experience both internationally and in Australia working on violence prevention programs. And Annie now works with eSafety Women on technology-facilitated gender-based violence, or TFGB.
We'll hear that one, I think,
yes.
a few times through the show.
Yes, it is a little bit of a mouthful, but it is important to really state what is going on here. So
yeah.
Annie will be talking about the emerging trends and some of the community-led responses to this tech-facilitated gender-based violence against LGBTIQ+ women, which is incredible to have this kind of knowledge
mm.
available and to see how it's being used to support our communities and
yep.
To be able to provide resources and a platform to reach out to if you do need support with this kind of stuff. So obviously a content warning for
yes.
tonight's episode. We will be discussing violence and abuse with a couple of specific examples. So if it is something that perhaps you might relate to in different ways
yep.
or perhaps it's better to take care of yourself and maybe step away from us, we won't mind. And please head over to joy.org.au/support if you do need to reach out to any of those extra services. But it is important to talk about this, and we hope that you'll be able to learn a bit about what eSafety are doing and what Annie will be talking about at the upcoming conference.
And how to respond, really, to seeing that technology facilitated gender-based violence in our communities. I think, you know, we're hoping to speak a little bit about being an upstander if people see that kind of violence. So we're very excited to speak with Annie. That's all coming up in this episode, so let's get straight into it.
You're getting well, well, well with the team from Thorn Harbour Health.
Here on Well, 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 you're Jack and Jacinta, and we're now joined by Annie Lamont, an expert on gender-based violence with 12 years of experience both internationally and in Australia, working on violence prevention programs. She now works with eSafety Women on technology-facilitated gender-based violence. Prior to this, she was a journalist with the Sydney Star Observer and worked with SOGI, I'm hoping that's how that's pronounced, and women's rights activists on strategies for resisting backlash. Annie, thank you so much for your time. I guess to begin with, tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at eSafety.
Hi, lovely to be with you all. So as you said, I've worked on gender-based violence and particularly on primary prevention programs for the last 12 years, both in Australia and overseas. I moved over to eSafety about a year ago now, and I work in the gender and tech team at eSafety, and a core part of my work is delivering on a government program, the Preventing Tech Abuse of Women Grants Program, where we're funding community-based organisations to start building primary prevention programs to try and stop tech-facilitated gender-based violence before it occurs.
And what is eSafety? Because I'm sure that people may have heard of eSafety and the Commissioner before, but how do you function and what resources does eSafety offer and to who? Is it about, members of the public, particular communities, or professionals?
Yeah, so all of the above, really. So eSafety is the government body, and we're here as a safety net for all Australians who are experiencing serious online abuse. So we have a series of different regulatory functions. We have our image-based abuse scheme, our cyberbullying and adult cyber abuse scheme, which give eSafety the power to require online service providers to remove serious online abuse that targets any Australian adult or child. So any Australian can report to us if they're experiencing online abuse, and you can speak to one of our investigators to receive compassionate, tailored support and advice. And that's regardless of whether what you're experiencing meets any regulatory threshold. Our investigators work really closely with people to try and work out solutions to keep them safe or to stop the abuse from occurring. We also, under the Online Safety Act, we also have tools and powers that allow us to hold industry to account and to ensure that they are using technology and effective processes to detect and remove content that is harmful. So in terms of who we're available for, it really is everyone who might need help or support. But one of the beautiful things about eSafety's work is that we also really recognise that some populations are more likely to experience online abuse than others, and that does include the LGBTIQ+ community, as well as First Nations people living with a disability. And so we also, if you go to our website and look through our resources, we also have very specific and tailored resources that have been developed through co-design and in consultation with community-based organisations to make sure that there are tools there that are really applicable to their experience and what they're encountering and need. And so I'd also really encourage people through this show. We have a section on our website called the LGBTIQ plus Learning Lounge that was developed in partnership with Thorn Harbour and ACON and others, that has very tailored resources for queer communities.
I suppose, what does technology-facilitated gender-based violence look like? What are some examples here that people may recognise?
So technology-facilitated gender-based violence, as opposed to just general online violence, is a specific form or manifestation of violence that is carried out using technology and digital devices and is directed against women in all their diversity and members of the LGBTIQ plus community because of their gender. They are targeted because of the way that they present their gender, discuss their gender, are their gender. And so technology facilitated gender-based violence is just one part of a broader continuum of multiple interrelated types of violence against women, girls and the LGBTIQ community. It's also usually or often connected to violence in the offline world. So I think we need to now thinking from this is something that just happens over there and we don't need to worry about it so much because we can close our computers. There is very much a connection to what happens to people in the real world as well. Some of the prime examples of technology-facilitated gender-based violence are image-based abuse, so the sharing of intimate images without consent, doxing, which is the sharing of lying details in order to harass someone, trolling, which I think a lot of people in the community are pretty aware of, which is, you know, posting images or videos for provoking and inciting violence. And misogynistic or gendered hate speech, which is part of how particularly queer experiences of violence interrelate and overlap because people can be experiencing tech-facilitated gender-based violence as a form of gendered hate speech directed at them because of their sexual or gender identity, or they can also be receiving it just because they're a woman or just because they're trans. So all of these forms are interrelated and overlapping.
And what are the impacts of this technology-facilitated gender-based violence, including the long-term impacts?
Yeah, so it's still, this is a really emerging field of research. And what we can see is that both the short-term and long-term impacts of technology-facilitated gender-based violence interrelate and overlap with other experiences of physical violence, emotional violence, and just general rates of discrimination. So the impacts of this are cumulative over time and impact people across their physical, mental, social, economic well-being. So some of the direct individual personal impacts for people include lower self-esteem or loss of self-confidence if you're constantly being berated, periods of stress, anxiety, panic attacks, which are manifestations of a response to experiences of violence, not being able to sleep well, unable to concentrate, and withdrawing a lot from interaction in spaces. So, you know, people not feeling comfortable or safe to interact in the online and digital spaces they ordinarily would. Which obviously, when you think about it on one level, it's relatively simple, but when you think about it in the grander sense, that impacts people's ability to get to work, to do their work. It impacts their ability to engage with their community. It impacts their ability to engage with their friends and family, so their support networks that are necessary. So the impacts, I think, are actually much more serious than a usual first glance at this issue might assume.
You'll be presenting at the LGBTIQ plus Women's Health Conference. Your presentation is titled Emerging Trends and Community-Led Responses to Tech-Facilitated Gender-Based Violence Against LGBTIQ plus Women. I suppose, what key points will you be talking about, is the talk and some of those trends, kind of covering the statistics, the strategies to respond, some of the stories you've heard. What can people expect at the conference?
I am so excited to present at this conference, partially because I also attended the very first iteration of this conference. So in my presentation, we'll be looking at some of the emerging evidence. And as I keep repeating, this is still just in general the realm of work on gender and tech, and tech-facilitated gender-based violence is a new and emerging across research on violence against women, research on gender-based violence, and also research on LGBTIQ plus experiences as well. So in terms of what I'll be going through, some of the emerging evidence we have is one of the few studies that we have in Australia, like a large-scale study that has specifically looked at the comparative experiences for lesbian, bi and heterosexual women, is a piece of research that was done by Anastasia Powell, Adrian Scott and Nicola Henry in 2018, and they're three, you know, great powerhouses in the field of research on violence against women and girls. So they found that lesbian and bi women are more likely than heterosexual women to experience particular types of digital violence, which include experiences of having offensive language directed at them, receiving offensive or degrading comments about their gender or sexuality, and also have increased rates of lateral violence. So lateral violence is when people are experiencing a form of violence from a member of their extended community or family or other people in their space. So an example in this context might be you're on a LGBTIQ plus information forum, or you're participating on ACON's Facebook group, and you say something that the rest of other people within your own community decide to jump on top of you and start bullying, online bullying in a way. So all of this points to that the experiences for queer women in terms of TFGBV is that we can see that their experiences of online violence and digital violence are very much rooted in harmful gender norms. So, for example, lesbian women compared to both hetero or bi women are considerably more likely to have offensive language directed at them in online spaces. And they're also more likely to experience threats of physical harm. So that shows us that the violence that is being experienced is rooted in harmful old gender norms where, you know, lesbian women are copying it because they're perceived to be stretching the gender norms that need to be policed by people online. By comparison, we also see that bi women are more likely to experience other types of online violence. So they are more likely to experience digital sexual harassment compared to lesbian women or hetero women, or to receive unwanted sexually explicit images or comments. So again, I think that speaks a lot to the underlying gender norms in our society that are more likely to be hypersexualized. We don't have the evidence, but potentially by men. And that points to harmful masculinities as well, that, you know, bi women are targeted for sexual harassment. Bi women, and this was one of the pieces of research that I find particularly interesting, that bi women were shown to be considerably more likely to experience having someone post offensive or degrading messages about their gender or sexuality, which for me, I wasn't expecting until I started looking through the research. But again, I think that points to a level of biphobia that exists within our society, that bi women are more likely to encounter that type of digital violence.
Here on Well, 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 you're with Jack and Jacinta, and we're still with Annie Lamont from eSafety Women. Stick around, we've got more coming up in just a moment.
Sexual health, mental health, and the overall well-being of our LGBTIQ communities. You're listening to Well, Well, Well.
You're here with Jack and Jacinta, and you are listening to Well, Well, Well. We are still speaking to Annie Lamont from eSafety, talking about some emerging data, emerging research and trends, really, the evidence of how LGBTIQ plus women experience tech-facilitated gender-based violence online. We were just having a chat about some examples of what you see, Annie, the different types of violence that our communities experience online, talking about some of those differences between lesbians and bi women. And I wanted to ask about some of the other important areas or particular communities or types of lived experience that you focus in on as well with this research. You did mention in your abstract for the conference looking at additionally marginalized communities. So we're thinking about First Nations, refugee and migrant women, trans women, and women with higher degrees of isolation. What are the experiences that you see are happening here online?
So in the same way that we see with other forms of violence in the real world, in the offline world, so to speak, experiences of violence are intersectional, and there is a continuum of multiple interrelated and overlapping experiences of violence. So particularly for marginalised communities, which includes First Nations, refugee and new migrant women, trans women, for those people, they're often finding themselves living at the intersection of multiple types of discrimination, abuse, and violence. So it's not like they're just experiencing it because of their race. They're also experiencing it because of their race, gender, socioeconomic status. It's not that they're just experiencing it because they are a new migrant woman who is isolated. They are also experiencing it because they are also a trans new migrant woman. All of these identities and predominantly the experiences of discrimination that underlie those identities and lived experiences drives the particular experiences they have, both in terms of the regularity, the type of violence they might be experiencing, and the severity of the violence they might be experiencing. So the abuse that's being levelled at them is also, hyper-personalised or connected to lived experience as well, because the abuse that's usually being levelled often targets who they are as a person, because of their beliefs, because of their culture, because of their sexuality or gender identity, essentially what they hold to be important or the that they get to choose that define who they are as a person interrelating in their world and culture. So again, the impacts of that are particularly harmful because this is not just general abuse because you were standing outside a pub and got king hit. This is something that's targeted at you specifically because of who you are. And that seriously has an impact on people's health in terms of their emotional health, their physical health, and their mental health. And one of the things that we need to continue reminding ourselves as we look at how these experiences of violence interrelate is that these experiences compound on each other over time. So you know, if you have been targeted for discrimination or direct violence in your workplace, and then you're going home and you are also experiencing online violence because of your race, your gender identity, etc., all of these experiences compound to lead to worse outcomes for people.
I guess, why is the qualitative research being conducted by eSafety, why is that so important in this area of work? Can you tell us about the gaps in examining the experiences of tech-based gendered violence for queer women?
Yeah, so at eSafety, we're working closely with LGBTIQ plus community health organisations to continually fill the gaps in our knowledge and to work collaboratively to design resources and tools that are targeted, tailored, and specific to the needs of the community. So while data and numbers are important in quantifying the issue, also to understand the lived experience of queer women and queer people to be able to tailor what we're doing and the advice that we provide. So one of the areas that we're starting to build this work is on the program that that I'm working on, the Preventing Tech-Based Abuse of Women Grants Program, which is being led by eSafety and is part of the Australian government improving the safety for all Australian women under the national plan. And the aim of that is to prevent technology-facilitated gender-based violence. But one of the ambitions of the program is also to operate in a way that enables us to collect new research, evidence, and data to better flesh out our understanding of what is happening for specific communities and how those specific experiences are connected to the underlying drivers of gender-based violence and the underlying gender social norms, so that we can start to work out, okay, this is where we need to start having conversations or shifting the dialogue around the early areas of gender norms in order to prevent the further expression of technology-facilitated gender-based violence. So through the program, eSafety will be funding community-based organisations to trial and test a range of primary prevention approaches to address the underlying drivers, attitudes and behaviours of TFGBV. And through that, we hope to collect critical evidence on what works to prevent it, and we'll be building, or hopefully we'll be building, a new repository of evidence, data, qualitative and quantitative research work that can help us to better understand, along with other people, what are the specific experiences queer women have of TFGBV, and what are the specific messages, tools, resources that are needed to prevent that from occurring?
Stay with us here on Well Are Well as we speak with Annie Lamont from eSafety about how you can act as an upstander when you see this kind of technology-facilitated gender-based violence here on Well Are Well.
Keen to keep the conversation going about health and well-being? For more episodes of Well, 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 head to the Joy website, joy.org.au/well-well-well.
You're still here on Well, Well, Well with Jack and Jacinta, and we're joined by Annie Lamont from eSafety, speaking a little bit about their upcoming presentation at the LGBTIQ plus Women's Health Conference, Emerging Trends and Community-Led Responses to Tech-Facilitated Gender-Based Violence Against LGBTIQ plus Women. I suppose within the context of this research and also the grant program you were speaking about a little bit earlier, Preventing Tech Abuse of Women, has there been anything in those projects that has surprised you or maybe came to you as unexpected? It stood out in a way you weren't expecting.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think for me in general, and for me personally, the reason I very much actively came over to eSafety is the entire field of work around gender and tech more broadly, and then tech-facilitated gender-based violence, is an incredibly new and emerging field of work. And so I think the capacity there for us to start thinking about what is going on now that we see, but also to think down the line in terms of all of the terrifying ways that technology will be used by perpetrators in the future. So I'm endlessly finding things that are interesting and new to me, and I think barely a day ever goes by at eSafety where I don't hear a new story about a new way that a perpetrator has worked out how to use technology to harass and terrify someone. So, you know, people using, people hacking into people's electronic heating devices in their homes just to turn the temperature up and down, just to send somebody, you know, make someone feel a little bit crazy. I'll correctly call it what it is, gaslighting. You know, young people using apps that I'm too old to even know in ways that they can harass each other. And, you know, all of the future potential around AI and deepfakes to be used in instances of image-based abuse, which we're already starting to see come through. So I think there are always... I don't know if fascinating is the right word, but there is always something that makes me stop and go, whoa. So that's in the broader sense. In terms of the research and what I've been given the opportunity to explore and will continue to explore at the conference, for me personally, and this maybe speaks to my own lived experience as well, but I was very surprised by the research demonstrating that from the evidence that we do have, and there are considerable gaps in our knowledge around trans women's experiences of online violence, but from the evidence that we do have, I was quite surprised to see that bi women's experiences were in fact more frequent than lesbian women's experiences, but also to see in the research the difference in the types of violence that they were experiencing, which to me, as soon as I look at that data, I can just see how that is rooted in gendered attitudes and norms. And also you can see how that, and again, it speaks to your own lived experience, but I understand it through, oh, I get it, you know, like that's why you get targeted for particular types of things. So I find that body of research incredibly interesting, but then moving forward for me as well, because I've always worked in primary prevention of gender-based violence, and so that's a field of work that has existed for about 20-30 years now, and obviously is getting a lot of traction in Australia over the last few years. What is exciting to me through the work that we're doing at eSafety is that we get to, through the Preventing Tech Abuse of Women Grants program, start to develop and test and iterate on different strategies and different approaches to preventing this specifically. And so we get to start looking at, you know, how do social norms that operate in online spaces influence people's either experiences or use of violence? Is that different to the social norms that are happening out in the real world? You know, do we need other approaches in this? And so I think what is also fascinating to me about that is the way that I like to consider it, or I conceptually think about it, is technology now is the underlying platform that exists in all of the other spaces where violence occurs. It is the underlying platform for your workplace, and so sexual harassment that occurs there. It is the underlying platform that allows you to engage in your community, sports group, etc. So the capacity to think about digital and online spaces as a way to not only prevent violence online, but also to prevent violence more broadly across all the spaces where it is occurring, is endlessly fascinating to me and endlessly exciting to me that Australia really has led this work and continues to lead this work globally. And so to be in a position where you get to be a part of building a new body of work is what a treat.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's these strategies and incredible resources and knowledge that is being built by programs like this and by research that is being done like this at eSafety and other places. I wanted to ask, what are some examples of the community-led strategies for resistance and resilience that you see in your work?
Yeah, so this is an area that I'm really passionate about in terms of how we help people in terms of holding their resilience in the face of online expressions of violence, but also how you come through and heal from these experiences. So I always like to, you know, give, I'd say probably one of the most common questions I always receive, what am I supposed to do when I see somebody, you know, trolling someone or piling on top of them in an online forum, which I think we all would have seen in various spaces. So the advice that we provide, and it can feel very counterintuitive to what you want to do, but the advice is never feed the trolls. Resist the urge to respond, or in replying, giving the troll what they want. So not responding is the best response. That being said, one of the most important things that we know helps people as they are going through this or as they are considering their options in terms of reporting either to the platform or to eSafety, and then long afterwards, one of the most important things to do is to support others in our community who are experiencing online harm. So that involves checking in on them, just as you would if you had seen somebody experiencing something on a Sydney or a Melbourne street. Check in on them and engage with what they're experiencing and feeling and encourage them to report it to the platform or to eSafety if they feel safe to do so when in time. So really acting as an upstander is, I see it as it is just a continuation or extension of how we have always looked after, protected, held each other in resilience as a community.
You were speaking about in what context people should be reporting to eSafety. How can people go about doing that?
Yeah, so eSafety was set up as a safety net if you're experiencing abuse. So you can report it to us, but what we recommend is, or in terms of what is the right process, I guess, is to report the issue to the platform first, because that provides a basis for us to then go back and request a platform to remove content if it meets the regulatory standards. So if the platform fails to respond, then you report it to eSafety. And I also just want to provide listeners with some assistance there as well, because it can feel very daunting or overwhelming to know how to report to a platform. Every platform has a different way that you do that, a different level of response. So on the eSafety website, there is a really, really useful and very, very extensive guide for a whole range of apps, online platforms that will take you through not only how to use their safety features to improve your own experience of the app, but also provides guidance on how to report to the platform. So if you're needing help there, we've got you. If the platform fails to respond, then you report it to eSafety, which is again a very simple process of going onto our website, and there is an online reporting form where people can fill out the details that they have available. And if it's possible, we recommend that people collect evidence. So that can be taking screen caps of things, that can be documenting some of the interactions you've had with a perpetrator, and whether you're reporting it to us, the platform, or the police, that can be used to indicate how to respond to the harmful content. Collecting the kind of evidence that is useful can include taking the web page address or the link where the harmful content appeared. So, for example, if somebody has, without your consent, uploaded an intimate image of you, and you know where the web page address or link is, that can be really useful because it makes it a quick process of this needs to be removed. Taking record of the usernames or the accounts and URLs of profiles that are being used to carry out the abuse, and records and times and dates the content was shared. So there, again, on our website, there are some very simple how-to guides that give you some guidance on how to collect evidence. But again, I want to stress, in terms of what eSafety and our investigators can do, even if you have not had the chance to collect that evidence, you can go on our website and you can fill out an online form that provides as much detail as you can, and then one of our investigators will get back in touch to discuss what's going on and to try and find the best solution possible at that point in time. So don't think that you need to be, you know, a mighty sleuth in order to get help. Really, we're here to hear what people are experiencing and help wherever possible.
If people want to find out more about this work and the resources eSafety has for our communities, where can they find that information?
So, yeah, as I just said, and would encourage so much, please go to the eSafety.gov.au website, and you can check out a whole range of resources, including guidance on how to report, guidance on how to use safety features within your own devices to help mitigate any harm. But there's also an incredibly beautiful and dedicated section, the LGBTIQ plus Learning Lounge, which has research, which has specific resources and tools, which has, you know, beautiful videos with people talking about their own experiences, but also how people within the community had, you know, held and upheld them and supported them through experiences. So I would really encourage people to go to the Learning Lounge, which was developed in collaboration with ACON, LGBTIQ plus Health Australia, the beautiful Thorn Harbour Health, and 2010. And we have specific resources around how to safely meet and chat with people online, how to protect yourself from online abuse, and how to hold on to resilience in the face of any experiences of abuse. There are also specific guidance materials that were developed by and for the community on what to do if you feel unsafe, which can, if you want, include detailed advice on how to collect evidence and report to the police or to eSafety.
Annie, what does it mean to you to be presenting, I suppose, on your work and these emerging findings at the LGBTIQ plus Women's Health Conference? What do you hope some of the main takeaways will be for attendees?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm excited to attend because I went to the very first LGBTIQ plus Women's Health Conference just as a viewer. Just found it such a needed space for experts, practitioners, community members, everyone to have space to discuss the very specific and usually under-considered and under-resourced areas of our lives, of our health, of our emotional health. So I'm very much excited to be back in that space and hear from others about what's emerging in other areas of community-based health work, but also very excited and what I hope to do is to contribute, thinking around what I see as kind of the next frontier of where we need to consider the new realm of harms, social and physical, or the social, physical, emotional harms that are coming towards us, and thinking into the future about rather than always waiting to respond to the issue once it is there and present, thinking ahead about life. Well, how do we as queer women, as a queer community, how do we want to operate now in order to, mitigate or stop those harms from occurring? So I really hope that people come along and maybe hear some evidence and data that they maybe can feel seen and represented in terms of this issue and the conversations that are occurring around it. And also, hopefully get other people in other practice spaces thinking about how technology-facilitated gender-based violence might be occurring or might be linked to the work that they're doing. Because as I said before, technology is now the platform that underpins all the other, everything else that we do. And so I hope that there are some doctors who take at the conference who take a moment to think, well, what do we need to do in our spaces and practice, or social workers, everybody, because everyone has a role to play in preventing and stopping all forms of gender-based violence.
Yeah, that is very true. And the conference does bring together all of those professionals and all of those community members in the one space. And Annie Lamont will be presenting on day two of the conference, Wednesday, 25th of October. We are very much looking forward to having you there at the LGBTIQ plus Women's Health Conference, Annie. Thank you so much for your time. Very much appreciate it, and looking forward to seeing you very soon.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on.
You're getting well, well, well with the team from Thorn Harbour Health.
That is all we have on this episode of Well, Well, Well. Thank you so much to Annie for joining us. If you missed part of this episode, indeed, if you're listening around Australia on the Community Radio Network, you did miss out on part of this conversation. So you can check out the full podcast and indeed the rest of our podcasts at joy.org.au/well. If you have any questions or suggestions for topics for us to dive into in future episodes, you can send those to well@joy.org.au. And indeed, if you're keen to hear more about Annie's work and a number of people's work that we've been interviewing over the last few weeks and in the coming weeks as well, the Women's Health Conference, the LGBTIQ plus Women's Health Conference, is happening on the 24th and 25th of October. You can head to lgbtiqwhc.au for more information. But that is it for the show this week. Thank you so much for joining me in studio, Jacinta.
Thank you for having me, and hopefully I'll get to see lots of lovely new faces at the conference.
Much to look forward to. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to Well, 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 supported by Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network. For more LGBTIQ plus health and wellbeing and much more, check out Thorn Harbour on social media at Thorn Harbour or via the website thornharbour.org.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.